The following is a conversation with Vardhan Saini, a visionary at the crossroads of AI innovation and entrepreneurship. We delve into Vardhan's work in generative AI for game development and his efforts in educational technology. Alongside, we explore the ethical landscapes of AI development and the challenges of building UniOne, a tech platform fostering community connections. Considering that my background is in biology and psychology, I tried my best to conduct a well-researched prior to this interview, but definitely not enough, unfortunately, to ask the best questions. For that, I'd like to ask for your patience, as I'm always improving, and your feedback to help me make this podcast better and better every day is very appreciated. Now, dear friends, this is Emreal Bilary Podcast. And here is my conversation with Vardhan Saini. You've been involved with generative AI interaction platform from Unity and I believe C Sharp.
Yeah.
Could you please break down what generative AI is, first of all, and how it's changing the way we create and play games?
Broader term, like generative AI, is I think... currently, it's no like cognition involved or anything like how we as humans can like think and then like produce something. Like right now, like the AI doesn't work like that. It's a lot of data fed into the system, and then system learns some patterns and like some special algorithms are applied. For example, large language models, we have like self-attention, and like using that self-attention, we like the system pinpoints, okay, like how, like what are the things that it should be like taking care of like more and like give more attention to, and based on that it produces output, and then fine tuning on top, which has OpenAI millions of dollars fine tuning big systems, and you are there. Right. See. So this is large language model, which you also call generative AI nowadays because it's like a hype term, right? Mm-hmm. Like people like to hear terms like this, and that is what generative AI is. In the sense of games, I would say like what we do is like we're trying to like predict, like what I'm doing in particular is like Unity is the tool I use to build like the front end of the system, and what my tool is basically, we're building a platform where people can like build 2D games without programming.
Okay.
So far like there are like platforms like Scratch. So what you do on Scratch is like you put like chunks of code into the system, and then like it produces a game out of it, as far as I remember, Scratch. The idea here is like a utopia of like building games where like you put characters on the screen, and we have like frames, like the system is built in like frames. So like frame 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, like you know how videos work.
Okay.
Yeah. So you basically try to describe a behavior in the format of pictures, which makes like a video.
Okay.
So if an action of like, let's say a zombie is moving towards right, and you can like literally do that motion in like four frames, showing that from frame 0 to frame 1, it moved like one step to the right. And then from 1 to 2, it moved like one more step to the right. Right. And then the AI starts like learning these rules in the back end and generates like, and then predicts like, okay, is this what you're trying to do? Like, are you trying to move the zombie to the right? Is that what I should learn? And if you like accept the prediction, then it's like, okay, rule learned. If you do not accept the prediction, then you can like alternate the behavior and like it will try to generalize again. That's the whole tool that I was working on with my professor. Yeah.
So technically, the entire idea is I go take a screenshots of myself playing Snake and in, let's say, different shots, and then I upload these images, and then it codes Snake for me?
That No.
Okay.
No, that was, I think there is a system like that as well. I think that's what my professor did in his thesis. Like he used videos to basically learn like the levels, and then the system would automatically generate the level from whatever it has learned from the videos. But the idea here is you don't upload any pictures from anywhere. We have some assets in the tool itself, right? Some assets like some characters. You can choose the character, you can choose like what you want to do with the character in within that tool, and like that tool has like frames from like zero, like you can go to n number of frames, like how many ever frames you want to add, and like describe emotion, describe like how should this character behave. Because every time you start building a game from scratch, currently the AI doesn't have any notion of like what is going on. Like it doesn't know physics, it doesn't know anything. So you can describe physics and it'll try and generate rules and learn like gravity, if you will describe the motion of gravity in the frame. Right? Does that make sense?
Does so okay, and how are you planning to implement pixel input into such system? Like, first of all, why pixel inputs? And second, why second, how are you planning to use very small just pixels to train this model?
So basically, do not think of it as pixels for now. I cannot comment on anything that my professor did originally, but in this frame, in this like game maker system or like mechanic maker, what we call it, in this mechanic maker system, we take X and Y, like positions, X and Y of the character, velocity of the character based on like how much, it's a grid system. So it's a grid system. So like how many boxes between frame one and frame zero, how many distance of the boxes, and that will become your velocity,
I see.
right? So we take like VY, VX, like velocities, and then we like take X and Y, and like we have some action buttons down there to describe like if you want to use your keyboard as the input, right? So like if you again coming back to the example of the zombie, if the zombie is moving to right, you can describe like, not describe, like there's a button down there, you can click on that button and say that right arrow is what I want to use as an input, and then the zombie should go forward to the right. Right? So all this information is combined, and then we produce like there's like a Python backend which does like all this machine learning stuff, and then it comes back to the mainframe, like which is like the Unity end, and then like it produces the game basically.
I see. And how would the process of scaling this program be? Let's say from 2D to 3D, what would the major obstacles? And
2D to 3D is like a huge challenge, man. I don't think I have thought about it like in depth right now, because again, I'm calling it a game maker. The official name is Mechanic Maker. We don't call it a game maker for a reason, because the challenge is like right now we have no notion of like starting point, ending point, no notion of like scores, right? No notion of the time or like something like that. So
it's
like
basically you telling the program to do something and the program is just doing it.
yeah, so basically right now it's producing mechanics, like basic movements. You can also kind of call it animation in control, right? Like it can basically produce a video. Like if you don't give the input actions down there and you just show that the zombie should move right, if you press the play button, the zombie will go to right. Right? There's no controlling the zombie right now. But if you want to control the zombie, you give in the input action, and you can control the zombie by giving like, so you're basically like trying to control a video.
I see.
But it's not a video. Right? Yeah.
Is that the same foundation that OpenAI's Sora is based on? Just
Sora is a whole
very
different
more.
beast. Sora is a whole different beast. Sora is like diffusion model, and I don't think I've read the paper so far, but like that is like a whole different beast. That has nothing to do with this. This is like a not that much money involved project, you know, like a local project at like university level, which can become big as we like try to do more things with it, you know, make it like a tool for like building 2D games and like make it better and better. Yeah.
What are the... Okay, before I go to the next question, I'm just going to refill your water.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, be back. Okay, you were talking about how Sora is a different beast. Can you...
Yeah, Sora is like, again, a lot of fine-tuning, a lot of money spent, and like they're doing like diffusion model plus like some fine-tuning and like mixing of like some LLM into it as well. And like, again, like I have not read the paper. I cannot comment on it exclusively, but it's like a whole different thing. Like Sora and this is not the same thing.
What are the technical aspects of doing research in this field? For example, I'm assuming your research funding is not just $1,000. You just go buy a computer for yourself and do these. So can you break down the technical obstacles and as a result expenses, not expenses in terms of financial, but overall the amount of technicality you have to take into account if you're entering into research as a startup,
as
a group that is trying to do this?
Okay, I literally started with my own laptop. I started my first semester, I believe. I met my professor at university in one of like the seminars, and he was interested in working with me. I was interested in working with him.
It was love at first sight.
I wouldn't call it that, but like it just happened, right? And like I started working. He hands me over some papers and like some information, and I'm like, yeah, let's go and look at it. I spent like weeks actually like looking into, but I have to give like update every week, so I try really hard. Like I basically spent my first year understanding like how do I do research, build something. I did 8 months of volunteer research assistant, right? I wasn't getting paid or anything. I was just very interested into it. No code platform back in day before generative AI was not a big term. No code platform, you can call it, and it just intrigued me a lot, man. Like, because I was coding way before this. And
what did you start with?
My programming.
Yeah.
I started coding in Java.
Okay.
Java was my first language, and that was like when I was like 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And like my first Android app was around like when I was 14 years old. It was for my school, actually. Me and my best friend, we always like, now my best friend, when we started working together, I don't think we were best friends, but we were like partners and like we were working together. We built an app for like our principal. Like he knew me because like I used to fix all of the school like computers and everything. Like he would, like I was just like a local IT guy for them, you know, like, oh, Verdan, speaker's not working, come over here, you know, oh, Verdan, this is not working. So, and I enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed it. So, one day he walks up to us and he's like, do you want to build an app for the school? And we are like, yeah, why not? I just never had this habit of saying no.
Uh-huh.
I would always say yes.
Well, that's
even though I didn't know shit about making apps. Okay. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I knew programming. I knew some basic stuff. And like, I don't even remember like what I used to do. I was a lot into graphics back in those days, so I was trying like different kind of VFX and like Photoshop and everything.
With coding?
Not with coding. Like this was like Photoshop era.
Okay.
I was trying to like do different type of graphic designing, and like my uncle taught me like building computers when I was even before 10. Like I used to watch him all the time like building computers. When it was like, I think I was like 4 years old, 5 years old. I would see him like building computers, and I would sit there like observe, like my life depends on it. I don't know why, But I was so intrigued looking at it. I was like, I want to do this. Like, I want to build computers. And then I like started building computers with him a little bit. And he built my, he actually built my first like computer that like I got. I was like in like lower kindergarten or something. He gave me like, he gave me a computer for my birthday. Right. And I was like so happy. I was like, God damn, bro. Like, this gotta be my day, you know? And I spent days on it. And I broke the computer so many times, you have no idea. Like, broke in the sense of, like, not, like...
It crashed. It just crashed.
Yeah, because, mm-hmm. like, I was trying to do so many things on it, and I didn't know how to fix them. Mm-hmm. So I actually started learning how to fix them, and that kept me, like, busy with it. Like, I'm also an only child, so...
Makes sense. Okay.
That should give you an estimate, right? And so I kept on fixing those computers and, like... By the age of 14, I was like, yeah, why not? Let's build an Android app. So this, my best friend and me, and like, we were like, okay, he's like a super smart guy. And he reached out to me after like my like principal, like school principal reached out to me. And then this guy reached out to me. He was like, you know what? I'm also interested. Like, let's do it together. I was like, sure. We were like in grade 8, 9, something like that. I don't remember. So we were like, okay. So we spent whole summer. I think we spent like 2 months, 3 months just getting the Android app on the phone with a blank screen. Okay. Nothing was on it.
Just trial and error.
Yeah. Nothing was on it. There was no clear documentation of Android back in like 2014. As far as we were concerned, we were like 13, 14 years old. As much as we knew how much like to push it, getting like, he gave up at a point. He was like, this doesn't seem true. We didn't even had our own laptop. Like, I borrowed a laptop from a friend, and he had, his dad ran like a cafe down there, like cyber cafe or something. So basically, like, they had a shop for like this, some digital work, and like, he was using one of their computers, and I borrowed one of my friend's laptop, which weirdly had like weird Windows, which was not original, I believe. Like, it was a pirated Windows, but I don't know how. Like, it was connected to some other service. It used to get updates like regularly, more frequently than Windows did itself. And I'm like, what the hell, bro? Like, I'm so exhausted with this thing. And then Android Studio would crash all the time because blue screen errors, like, back in day, it was, like, crazy amount of blue, like, computation power we had. We were, like, on, like, Intel Core i3s or something like that. Like, that is, like, that was, like, a good CPU for the day, but it wasn't enough for developing apps, you know? And, like, I think we blew, like, 2 computers doing that. And but like, my attitude, like, he one point he gave up. He was like, it's not working, it's not gonna like work out, you know, like the app is not coming together. And I'm like, hell no, I'm not giving up on this thing. There are other people building these apps. Like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, I never think of something to be like too big of a deal, mm-hmm. just to begin with, because it'll overwhelm you. Like, you'll never start. Like, you'll be like, hell no. Hell no, I don't want to do this. It's too much work, right? But I tried to take like one step at a time, and I was like, okay, you know what? We're going to try this. We're going to put it together. Even a splash screen, like working splash screen would be like an achievement. Once that app came to the phone, like that Samsung, that bad Samsung phone, man, like I remember that phone. It barely worked. Once that app like came into that phone, we were jumping, bro. 11 p.m. and like, I didn't go home. My mom's calling me. She's like, where are you? You know, like, it's time to go home, like sleep. And like, and I'm like, mom, it's just almost there, you know, like empty blank app. Right? And we were jumping in his like garage. Like, it is literally his garage, like his house and his garage, and his garage is the shop. They converted the garage into a shop, right? And we were like jumping in that garage like something big happened here. Like, we were like nuclear physicists or some shit. And we were so happy, bro. And I just like remember that moment so clearly because like that was like, okay, stepping stone, stage one, done, you know? And from that point forward, we did build the whole app for the school and like put it on the app store. I don't think it exists anymore because like then they tied up with some company to like build like another app.
Mm.
And like, I think that principal left the school. He went to like a different school. He tied up with a company to build like a whole app for the school. But I feel like we gave him the prototype. We gave him like how it could work, some bare minimum features without a database.
Uh-huh.
We were like just sending the pictures. I think there was a database, Firebase. Firebase used to be like a little more liberal than what it is today. Like you would get like a little bit more storage. And like we connected our app with Firebase and like we would send stuff to people's phone directly.
Like
right.
Like the announcement or messages?
I don't remember if notifications were working or not, but I remember like we also like had a feature of like where people could see like the photos of like the functions and events that happened at university.
I see.
So we would manually upload it to the database and then the database would send it to like everyone's phone and we would cache it on everyone's phone because we didn't know how to manage this system before.
So technically you just created the student union's Perks app when you were 14.
It does Perks, I don't know if Perks do this or not.
It's how am I supposed to explain this? It's like it has the announcements of the certain events.
Yeah.
It keeps your scores and you can create an account, and as far as I'm concerned that's the primary functionality. If I might be mistaken though, but pretty similar.
Yeah, so basically that's what happened, and that experience like that I gained during the whole process is what gave me a little bit of confidence. Is like, I want to go to university, I want to try being a research. I had this idea before coming to university that I want to try to be a research assistant. I know it's very hard. I'm like a first year undergrad, like they're going to be like much more competitive people, but I'm going to try.
Mm-hmm.
This attitude of like not letting it go is like just with me. I just can't let it go.
That's very, yeah. That's valuable, man. Let's go back to the topic of technicality of starting a startup about this AI in the AI field.
I think we went on like on a different path, but coming back to that, for startup research, I think that's like a whole different beast. Like that's a different game, I believe. I'm not sure if I'm the right person to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even sure like how are you pointing out like startup research. They're like, is the research the goal of the startup? Or
technically the goal of the research is to create a product that is similar to Sora eventually at like, you know, 10 years down the line.
You need a lot of backing, a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And for like that particular project, if you're comparing it to Sora, you need like some like real connections for that, you know. You need like some, that is a big time deal.
Mm.
I don't think like it is like a thing you can do at home. But the research I started didn't require that much of like capacity. So I bought like a secondhand MacBook. I always wanted a MacBook. I'm like a huge
Apple fan.
I just didn't want to say that, but yes. Yes. So I bought my first MacBook and it was because like the HP that I had was like too slow. So I was like, I need something like better. And like, I had to move on to a product that I really wanted. Like I was literally saving for this device, like all of my pocket money growing up. Like I was like, I want that laptop like so bad. Like I want to save every penny I have until I get to that point, you know? And finally the day I got it, I know it was secondhand, the first one, but the second one was like literally best of their line. And I was like, now I'm good. I'm happy about it. But again, research was like local. I did it on my own device. I got my own devices. I don't know. I didn't try to ask much from him because I was like also scared that like I'm like just a kid, you know, who's trying to make it here. And I don't want to like give any excuses of like, okay, yeah, I can't do it because I don't have computation power or something like that.
So what are the fundings available for the computer science department allocated to?
I mean, so he saw me working on it for 8 months, and I also took one of his classes, and I think he liked me, so he offered me a full-time position in summer. The pay was very nominal, but like I'm fine with that because I was enjoying it so much. And I was very happy that I got like paid position as a research assistant after finishing my first year. I was very happy. Like I had like no regrets or anything like that. Like I was very happy about it.
I see.
So again, it depends on like who do you research with and what is your research category. Based on that, you do get like devices from like professors, and like if you like really need it, we have Compute Canada. I think it's called Digital Alliance now, which is like a cloud computing for like all of the universities all together in Canada, I believe. And you can request an account from your professor, and their professor gives you the access to this like Compute Canada. This Compute Canada has like all the big GPUs, like A100s, T4s, or like whatever you want. And then you put your request into the queue, and it processes your request of like processing the data or whatever you want to do, and then gives you back the result.
I see.
So there are like many things that you can do if you're like computationally challenged. Mm-hmm. Just talk to your professor, and like he will definitely be able to help you on that part.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. I see that you used Python-based models to predict compound word embeddings. Can you explain what compound word embedding is and what's it's used for?
So that project is like currently on hold, but basically I was building it's a transformer based approach of like predicting compound words. Compound words are like snow plus man makes like a snowman. So that's snowman is a compound word, right? And this was before ChatGPT came into the game, right? And I was like trying to build this before this. And the main idea was like, the main generative idea with this was, if I am able to successfully make the system understand that like snow plus man is a snowman, and it should give system some idea of like what a snowman is. And then if I say like, let's say leave plus man, leave man, what is a leave man? Like like our heads can like immediately think of it, but a system cannot understand what is a leave man given the example of a snowman. Mm-hmm. Right? So like some generative outputs out of this, like I thought that it would not be that challenging, but so far whatever we tried did not work. Yeah, I don't know how to put it. Like I tried building my own transformer, and like transformer has some challenges, so we paused it. Like we will go back to it. Like I'm currently building another project, so once I'm done with like this mechanic maker stuff, I'll go back to like and try this again. But we had challenges like doing this particular thing, and it's like it's difficult to explain until and unless I produce something out of it. It's difficult to explain. Yeah,
I understand. Let's talk about the Capstone dashboard that you designed. So data visualization, meaning the turning numbers into pictures for better understanding. Can you explain how you used machine learning to improve on that?
There's no machine learning involved in that. That project is, we have a class called Compute 401.
Okay.
And, my professor was Dr. Ildar, and he's not in this university anymore. He's in a university in Vancouver right now, but I still look up to him as my mentor. Like he's like a great guy, really like him. So this was his project, and we were building this in Compute 401, And the idea was that we analyzed the capstone classes in university, starting with Compute 401. Compute 401 is also a capstone class where like people come in and pitch and students build the project for them. So we were building the project for him, for the class, for Compute 401.
Mm-hmm.
So basically take the data of like the whole class and try to figure out like who's doing really well, why are they doing it really well, who's not doing really well, why are they not doing really well, and if they're not doing really well, how can we help them?
And I'm assuming this approach wasn't individualized, right? It wouldn't be like, okay, Verdun, you're not doing good. It would be like, okay, these people are not doing good. Because, well,
yeah,
if it's that personalized, that would be extremely more helpful.
It is kind of personalized. Like you can see, like, these people are not doing good. And then these people, like, you can, like, see specific information of each person. Because, like, in the beginning of the course, they would ask about, like, people's GitHub, LinkedIn's. Like, you used to fill a form, and that form we directly process into the system. And, like, the goal of Professor was, like, to help these people understand, like, or help himself understand, like, what is the problem? How can he improve the course? How can he help, like, other students, like, who are facing challenges in this course? And, yeah, basically, that's the whole system of, like, Capstone Dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, 401 class was, like, I really liked it. It was an amazing class.
Nice.
That is where UniOne started, actually.
We'll talk about it later. Hang on. I don't want to change the tangent I'm going by.
Sure.
Don't worry. We'll get there. I promise you.
No. It's all good. It's all good. No, I just want to know, like, I thought this is where you're going to. So I'm like giving you a heads up that this
okay,
is.
Okay, let's go into that one then. Okay. Let me ask a more specific question about UniOne. It's a platform that connects university students with shared interests. Really sounds like a Tinder, but it's different, and I'll explain how. Actually, you explain how. Are you hoping to implement AI in any level in UniOne? And if yes, what difference do you think that would make? How would it differentiate UniOne from apps like Tinder or Bumble?
Okay, so how we came up with UniOne was like, okay, there was a hackathon in Compute 401. Okay, let me give you like the basic core idea first, and then we will talk about like, how am I gonna compete with anyone, or do I even need to compete with anyone? But like, obviously we will be competing in that market, so I'm not saying like, not at all, but. So we were sitting in the class and we were like, by that point, like I did quite a few hackathons and I was like, I'm not like really interested in doing one anymore. You know, I was like, let's like go out, hang out or some shit or like something like that. And like, not basically spend time building something in the class because I don't know, I was like bored. And, a friend of mine was like, he's like, oh, it'll be great. He's the co-founder. So, it'll be great if we could like find people on campus.
Hmm.
And I was like, yeah, how do we do that? Like, tell me a way of finding people specifically on UFA. Can you find people like on UFA on campus, like without like without asking some other people, okay, like, are you free? Are you free? Are you free?
Yeah.
Right. Like that is like a painful process. At least I wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And, I was like, why don't we just like take Google Calendar or like some other calendars and like sync people's calendar and try to find out like empty time slots from people's schedules,
mm-hmm.
right? And once we figure out like who is free when, and if they're free at the same time as we are, we can just go hang out with them, right? We can figure out something around that. And we started building like a prototype and like Figma design and stuff like that. And we came across the same challenge. It was like, okay, so we make a Tinder. like how is this different, right? First of all, I don't think Tinder does the scheduling stuff for you, by the way. second of all,
you're supposed to have some risk to do that yourself.
Yeah. So Second of all, we were like, okay, we don't want any pictures on our platform.
Okay.
So we don't have any pictures on the platform. So basically you put in your interests, your hobbies, and like the idea is beyond just like shared interests. The idea is like, I'm going to gym at 5 p.m. today and like I want a gym buddy. Like it might make it easier for me to go to the gym, right? You're an international student. I'm an international student. We are doing this podcast. We are doing this podcast because you and I were introduced by this third person, right? Imagine opening your Uni One app who a guy is also interested in doing a podcast. You're also interested in doing podcasts. You both go to UFA, right? You guys like connect with each other and like we generate like a random location for you guys. Like you also have a chat feature. We limit it to 5 questions and 5 answers just to make it a little bit interesting and not spend too much time like on the social media.
That makes a lot of
sense. The idea is like we want people to meet in real life. We want connections to happen on university because connections on universities are very important as far as my understanding goes. And then like if you don't have pictures, so basically we generate a random location on campus, but we make sure like it's like some eating place, and that's why we also ask like for your food interest in the app.
So the location is also on the app. The decision of choosing a location is also on the app.
Also
so
on the app.
All thing you have to do is to just reach out to the person who has.
That's it. That's it.
Wow.
That's it. That is the idea. Like it takes away the steps of like asking someone out, like, "Oh, bro, do you want to go have shawarma or something like that?" We give you a spot to meet on campus. We give you a time to meet on campus. Like you give us basically the time to meet on campus based on your availability and stuff like that. And then when you go there, you can notify the other person. We have like specific notifying feature. You can notify the other person like that I have reached here or if I'm not coming or if I'll be late or something like that. And we give you like a card. You both have like a unique card that only you two will have. And we advise one of the person who has reached the spot already to keep like, to keep your phone on the table, and that card is like on the table, and the other person can like look for the card. So that's how you meet the person. There's also an option like when you chat, like you can literally share your Instagram, or you can share whatever you want to share, right? Like I cannot control that.
But don't you think that cancels out the option of having to go meet in person?
That should not cancel out the having to meet in person option because. Like the whole idea of the app is that, I mean, again, you can use the app however you want. We will generate a location for you. We will make like a meeting spot for you, right? Like whatever the spot is on the campus, you have a time scheduled, like your classes and everything is taken into consideration and whatever your free time slot is and like your interest. And we make sure the other person is also interested in like talking to the same subjects. Like you want to go swimming together, you want to like play badminton, like anything, basically anything you two want to do. You want to make new friends. International students, we always want to make friends, man. Like at least as far as I am concerned, I always want to make friends. And I feel like making these connections is essential for me to feel like home, at home.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm still like Edmonton is kind of my home now. I'm in fifth year, last semester. I know so many people and that makes me comfortable. And the sense of comfort is like what I feel like would really help people. Also making so many connections help you grow in future, right? Like you want to know, oh, guy, like, are you working for IBM? Can you put me a referral, man? You know, now I know this guy, right? And I think that is like something that is missing right now. Because people are like really tied up in their like social medias and like not spending, like not trying. And like, it's hard, man. It's hard. It, like asking someone, hey dude, do you go to the gym? I want to go. Like, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard. So like we're trying to solve the problem or trying to put a bandaid on the problem with like whatever way we thought. And if people have like some feedback for us, like, okay, you guys can do this better. Sure, let's update the app and bring it to you back and like tell me what more do you want in it, right? So slowly we want to make sure that like we integrate some clubs, some events, into the app so that people can find out who is going to what club, who is going to what event, and like, oh, I know this person, I also want to go like to this club or event, and like you can like see all the events and clubs at one place, mm-hmm. which is like another huge,
it's a very good benefit. Yeah,
yeah, like people generally don't go to events or because they don't know,
or if you get a notification that hey, Verdun is going to I don't know, this event directed by the student union,
yeah,
in 2 weeks, do you want to go as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like that kind of like, okay, yeah, I also want to see, I want to check it out, I want to basically make sure that people utilize university to its full potential. Right now I feel like a lot of people just don't know about things. I don't want to assume that if people know, that's awesome, but like if you don't know, and if you don't, if you're like introvert and you don't want to reach out to people, I think this could be a one step towards that direction. I'm not making any claims, but I'm trying to put a bandaid on.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as I'm aware, it's available in App Store.
It's currently on beta testing phase, so it's only available to people I sent the link to.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've overcame the coding challenge now, which is the first step, but the next step is getting user interaction.
Yes.
How is that going?
I'm learning. I'm a tech guy, right? Like marketing is not my forte, not something I have done. I'm trying to learn, right? And part of that process is like reaching out to people, seeing like how can I get like more user interaction with the app? How can I improve the app with their feedback? Right, like improving the app with their feedback with my like schedule is a huge challenge, and like I have like some people working with me, and also we take, again coming back to Compute 401, what we do is the professor liked our prototype so much in 401 that he gave us an opportunity of becoming a client in the class. Mm-hmm. So the next semester we went in, we pitched the app, and we got a team of people working with us, 7 people on the app. And after that, I kept going in like 2 more semesters. This is my 3rd semester going in.
Uh-huh.
And this semester, we are building a website to like put the front face of the app and like all the things that we are doing here, right? So I really like try to utilize university resources to like benefit them, benefit myself, and like learn a lot more about people, team management. And I enroll myself in like business courses like SCN 330, 331, where I literally built like my professional pitch deck for this. So I'm using like courses to build UniOne. Mm-hmm. And I'm also like amazing, man. Like I can do this. Like that is like University of Alberta's like miracle, I would say. Like I don't think I could do this in some other university in India, like where I can like choose my own project and like work on my own project, and like everyone is like trying to help me achieving my goal. That is amazing, man. Like this community is amazing. Professors are amazing. If you just like work with them, try to put your honest effort, I think you can really shine here.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through? Can you walk me through the regulatory steps? Because you're, sorry. You, with this idea, you are not breaching someone's privacy, but you're dealing with someone's privacy, and how much you how much that privacy shared with you and other users is a tricky thing to deal with. So how are you managing that? And as far as I'm concerned, you're also, I think, inclined to receive student ID as well, which is a university technically related information. So
we're not asking for student ID. You sign in using your university email.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not exclusively asking for your student ID or anything.
So you have no connections with the university whatsoever.
We do. This. University email. University email is the connection.
Yes, I understand. But yeah, you don't have any responsibilities toward university's data.
So far, I haven't digged like deep into this, mm-hmm. but I think like eventually at some point, I would have to talk with like lawyers and like everyone else about this. This is definitely something that we have thought. We've already built like a flagging system That is like an AI-based flagging system, you can say. So if anyone tries to write anything wrong in the app or like say something that should not be said, we immediately flag them. In our like, we have like this admin website built. We immediately flag the user. We immediately get to know that this user has done something, and we can block the user. We can restrict the user. Like, we're trying our best to like make sure that like we are not letting any of the people in that are going to harm the community. Mm. Again, this is focused on university college students, and it'll be like a special experience for each university, each college. Like if we open up this app for McEwen?
McEwen.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Sorry, man.
All good. So if we open up this app for like Nate or like all of those other places, right? They're going to have an experience for their own college, for their own university. We are not going to mix up everyone matching everyone, right? We are only matching people within each university and each college. And every year there are new people coming in. So there are new users going to come in like every years, and like some users are going to leave, right, as they graduate university and stuff like that. So the idea is to build something specifically for this community, helping students in specific.
I see.
Yeah.
Makes sense. You touched on the element of marketing as well. How are your efforts on that? Are you planning anything specific in for the next year to how to scale the target audience?
Yeah, I'm trying to like do more Instagram posts, I guess. Like, that's my first go-to strategy right now. Do more LinkedIn posts, reach out to people myself. I know a lot of people for sure. Once we have like a solid build, I feel like that this build is like capable of like handling enough people, I'll share out the link with like everyone for like alpha testing, you can call it. Mm-hmm. So that more people can join in, or like open testing, more people can join in, and I can see like how my platform behaves with like so many people on it. That is my strategy right now, to be honest. There are a lot more things to do, but I don't know like if I can put it in like few words here.
I understand.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about funding? At this stage of functionality, do you need funding? And
we are getting closer to like, yes.
For doing specifically what?
We are getting closer to like, yes, we need funding now because we need bigger servers. Our server is like responding slow now because more people are coming onto it.
Can I ask how many users you have currently?
I think all of them are like my friends and like my friends of friends. So maybe like 30, 40 users. Mm-hmm. Not much. But again, that was intentional because server would not be able to handle like too many users right now. We have like a lot of things running on the back end.
Makes sense.
And we definitely need some funding for like making the back servers a little bigger and having like a permanent developer working on it. Because I'm like, I cannot like leave my job right now, but I'm definitely like looking forward to the startup. If we can do something well, then I want to make this my full-time thing. Mm-hmm. And like move to this thing for like as long as I can, right? And if not, this is something like startups are something I always wanted to do. Back in day, like when I was building my first app, we also tried building a startup around it to like help people like build startups or help people build apps and stuff like in our neighborhood. Didn't go very well, but we tried.
Well, it's the first one. The first one always fails.
Yeah, we tried. So I think this is my second try, I would say, on like building something. And I'm definitely like much better than that, that position. So we're trying, yeah.
You also touched on team management.
Yeah.
How many team members do you have right now? What's the dynamic? Because I'm assuming, as the co-founder and as the person who is trying to be on top of everything that is happening, you are touching on everything but in smaller scales than your team members who are more into either the back end or the front end. So how's the dynamic of that, and what are the challenges of managing a team that is solely working on an app?
So right now, my other two co-founders, one of them works, I don't want to say the name of the companies, but like both of them are working for a company right now. I will be working full-time UFA. Mm-hmm. As a software engineer. Thank you. So they are not as involved lately, but I am the one who's like trying to work on the app, and we have a guy named Mark. His name is Mark, and he helps me handle all of the backend stuff and like whatever I need. Like sometimes I'm busy, so he fixes the bugs and stuff like that. So Mark is the go-to guy for like, okay, Mark, there's this issue going on. Okay, Mark, there's like something else is going on. Can you like help me resolve that? So Mark helps me to do all of this stuff. And I do it myself as well, a lot of this. But again, we have teams from 401, which help me like build new products.
How do you communicate the product division you have with those students? Because first of all, those are students. They're students. They're having 4 or 5 other courses than the course that they're trying to build the app for you.
Yeah.
So of course, they're not going to focus on it full time, nor they're going to put in the creativity and the effort to optimize the app. So just have to give them something and they treat it like a to-do list. And I believe there is a very limited number of interactions you can have with those students over the semester. And then the new class comes and you have to do this all over again. So what are the challenges for that?
So first of all, the project is like it's not like a one thing going in every semester. It's a new thing going in every semester. So one semester we went in with the app, and like you're really underestimating the talent of UFA. They're like really talented people. Like they built the whole app. Like those 7 people built the whole app in like 4 months.
Wow.
And then we had a whole dashboard built in 4 months. And Mark was one of the guys in that dashboard team. He was like, he did like amazing. Like he put in a lot of effort and like he reached out and I was like, come on board, you know, we can figure something out. So that's how we got Mark on team. And the current project, it's the same thing. Like it's a whole different project. Like we're building a website to like showcase our like app and dashboard and everything. So because it's like a whole different project every single time, they don't have to like, there's not like too much problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I would say is getting across the point that we are like a startup. We need like professional builds. We are trying to like make sure the branding is on point, the fonts are on point, you know, like every single time. That is a little challenging, but people here are talented, man. They can do stuff. Yeah, definitely.
And with every team, there is the problem of keeping the number of people who are working on the project optimal. Too low will, of course, you won't have as much of a speedy process as you want, and maybe too many, just you lose control of the people that are actually working on the project. So
I wouldn't say that. I would say like because it's like 4 months and like so many like tasks, like 401 is meant to be challenging class. It's not like we didn't do like when we were building so Capstone GPA dashboard booster. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say like it's particularly GPA booster. But if you'll do well enough in the class, they'll give you like good grades. The point is to teach people like real life software engineering process. And I love it. And I like my professor and I got along really well, Professor Dr. Eldar. Mm-hmm. And I really like the process of them like going through this, like building like a whole professional app that gives them like this real life experience. And they're like ready to take on to the world and like, yeah, I want to build more stuff after this. It really gives them the picture. And I really like the process. Like, if they're stuck on something, if they want some help, again, they're really good. They're already good. If they're in Computer 401, there's a good chance that they're already really good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And UFA has some, like, real talent.
Have you ever tried recruiting students from those classes as, of course, not an employee, not the person who gets paid, but as a volunteer for the.
Not exclusively, except Mark. Mm-hmm. Mark wanted, like, he wanted to work and he really liked the idea. He wanted to become a partner. We haven't finalized anything on that end yet, but like, he will become like some percentage partner at some point, right? So we do, but like, I don't specifically go out and like reach out to them to be like, if you want to be volunteer. I kind of like, if they really like the idea, they will try and reach out to you, right? And I think it's better that way.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so it keeps the relationship professional. And yeah, I mean, I can do that. Like, if I want to ask people, like, maybe they'll say yes. I don't know. But I don't want people to be on board for the sake of being on board. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're really interested, you'll like reach out. Otherwise, I can code too. That is not the problem.
It's not a necessity, I'm assuming. Okay, I wanted to talk to you about ethics in AI as well. As a research assistant and to be software engineer at U of A, what are the specific ethics you have to take into account when you're working on AI?
Interesting. I haven't given much thought to it, but like, my project specifically did not, like, actually one of my recent projects that I'm doing in like Compute 469, I guess, like, they're like the brain scans of people looking at some images, and based on that, like, we are trying to reconstruct the images using just the brain scans, fMRI data in particular. So maybe there's like some ethics around that, but I don't have to deal with it because the guy who's providing us the data is like dealing with all of this beforehand. And this game stuff, there's like not much ethics to deal with. It's just game data, not personal data. But AI ethics in general, like, you want to make sure that, like, when you're like, I don't think big companies do this. I don't know if they do this or not. You want to make sure that, like, the profile you're building of a person given on the data, it's like separated from his identity.
Okay.
So if you're using some X iPhone and you're searching something, blah, 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 I know that there's this ID who has, like, who does this, and I want to, like, show this person, like, better ads or, like, better something. So I want to create a persona, a digital persona of you, but not you. So it should not point back at you. Like, it should not say that this data belongs to this person, right?
Yeah.
So that is, like, one of the things, I guess, like, more and more companies are trying to do, or like more and more companies have to do, mm-hmm. given the laws and stuff. But that is like one of the top concerns, and like the biases in AI based on like if the models are trained on like more white people images, then it's gonna be more like biased towards white people, and like it's gonna give you images of more of white people. Mm-hmm. And if your model is like not understanding like Whatever bias exists in the data in real life, mm-hmm. will exist in models if you do not correct the data, mm-hmm. right? And the same goes for AI ethics. Like, if you're taking it leniently, if you're having all sorts of information associated with the person, then I know everything about you, and that is not okay. So this like division between like identity on the internet, which does not point back at you, is very important.
Okay, now my question is going to become a little bit more personal. What kind of AI researcher are you? Do you believe in going boundless and innovating and making mistakes, and as a result taking a step back and saying, oh no, that was wrong? Or are you the kind of guy who is like, okay, we got to be cautious about every single step that we make?
I mean, everyone tries to be cautious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, companies like Google and like Apple and every, like, they have like, they already have all the data that they want/need. They were like way ahead of like any of us.
Yeah.
I personally would like try my best to like segregate the information of like a user from like his identity, like his data from his identity, which is like, I guess like what is going to happen as we build like more new startups and like more new apps is like the only reason that people are going to migrate to something new or better, at least that's what I think, is if it makes sure that it doesn't associate with you, but still gives you really good performance,
mm-hmm.
still gives you what you want, but it doesn't like nobody can wake up one day and tell like, oh, this is the guy who this data belongs to.
I see.
Right. So that would be one of the differentiator for the new companies, for the new startups, for the new AI companies or whatever. How many people actually follow it? I don't know. Right, like that is like a huge if. If you're not an expert, how would you be able to tell it? Like, how would a regular user be able to tell that someone, if Google is taking your data or not? They said that they put a UI button saying, "Oh, do you want to give your data? Okay, or cancel." If you press cancel, what is the guarantee that the data, like, cancel does not specifically mean that they would not take the data.
Mm-hmm.
I can make any action do anything. I am a programmer, right? I know the stuff. Like, I can do whatever I want. How would you verify it is my question.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, that's the question I'm asking. How would you verify it? As let's see it as from a perspective of a regulator who is trying to actually test these things. Now, it's getting more into a podcast, bro, like about controversy. Do you think Google has our data?
Do you think it does not? I would be cautious, my friend. Do you think it does not? I don't know, like, how can you ever verify without digging into their database, saying that, oh, they don't actually know about you. They definitely know about you, man.
Okay.
We're talking about this podcast. I'm 100% sure. I'll go back home and I'll get like 100 ads on like podcast on my Instagram or my YouTube or something like that. Like, I don't know. Has it ever happened to you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so like you would talk about this. We were talking about this Lenovo laptops the other day, and like suddenly everywhere on my Instagram, it's like Lenovo has discounts. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen again. But yeah, so you get my point. Like, how I am not, my phone's not even on right now. I don't think my Hey Siri is active, or is it? I am not sure. But like, even if your Hey Siri is not, like, Siri is not active, it's still listening to you somehow. People are trying. How can you control this? Is it decentralized data? Like, I don't know if decentralized is the correct word. But like, is it like the data like that is segregated from like the company? For example, if I'm getting an ad of Lenovo without Facebook knowing that, or Meta, without Meta knowing that I am the one who's talking about Lenovo, it might not be a problem, right? But it is a problem if they know that I am the one who's talking specifically about Lenovo and I am the one who's getting the ad of Lenovo.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't know who is talking about Lenovo, but I'm getting an ad of Lenovo, that is fine. Do you get the difference?
I'm getting it, yes.
Yeah. So I think that I wouldn't mind as much. But I would mind if they're like listening to every of my conversation and like they're like, oh, maybe this guy wants this. Let's put, like, obviously they're not doing it by hand. There's like a lot of algorithms to do this.
But it does exist.
But the idea is like it's going in their database. And I don't know if my identity is associated with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
If my account is directly associated with this ad or not. Right?
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for coming, man.
No worries.
Appreciate it. This was a lovely, lovely chat.
Same here, man.
What's the next step? What's the next step for you, for Uni One? How is it going to be?
Next step is graduating.
Hey,
I have like a month and a half left, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So finally, and and then I'm doing like my full-time work here. And the intention behind that was also because I would be able to work on Uni One.
Mm-hmm.
and do my full-time job and like continue taking part in my research, maybe volunteer again in my research lab. Again, research is something I really like because it keeps me up to date and like I try to push myself and like do new things and like it's fun. It's really fun for
me. On the edge.
Yeah, living on the edge.
Some other sense.
Yeah, so that is the goal for now. I'm here in Edmonton, so probably we'll meet again, I guess.
Hopefully, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Again, thanks for this conversation. It was a lovely conversation. thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Zones Up Podcast with Amir Libileri. Till next time, have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Yeah.